I was very confident as a young girl. And then with children, it was just people really make you feel inadequate, incompetent, because you have children. So I think that's when it hit really hard, you know, with the maternal wall. And then it took years to rebuild myself back and to become aware. And it was by becoming aware of these barriers that I realized, you know, I'm not the problem. There's nothing wrong with me. And then I rebuild my confidence and I'm back, let's say. So, but it's a long process to unlearn all of those pressures from people that make you feel unworthy.
I'm Tiffany Sprague, and welcome to the UNDP's STEM for All podcast, in which we spotlight a diverse range of people within the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or as commonly referred to STEM, ecosystem. We're working to advance girls and women in STEM education and careers in the Europe and Central Asia region. I'm joined today by Isabel Torres. Isabel is a co-founder and CEO of Mothers in Science, an international nonprofit that aims to increase the retention of women in STEM careers by advocating for workplace equity and inclusion of mothers and caregivers. After completing a PhD degree at the University of Cambridge in the UK and a postdoc at the MRC Laboratory of Molecular Biology, Isabel moved away from the bench and established a scientific editing and consultancy business, while also working as a freelance science writer. More recently, she founded Pretty Smart Science, a science communication platform that combines science and art to promote scientific literacy and increase the invisibility of women in science. She's passionate about science communication and about promoting women in STEM and advocating for gender equality. She lives in France and is a solo mom of four curious and very funny kids. Welcome, Isabel, and thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Tiffany. Thank you so much for the invitation. So glad to be here.
Great. So let's jump right in. So you have such an interesting and varied career path. Can you tell us a bit about your background, where you grew up, and what were your early interests?
So yes, my career path hasn't been linear. So I grew up in Portugal. I'm Portuguese. I had a very happy childhood, and I was lucky to be encouraged by my family to just pursue whatever I liked. I liked everything in school. I liked every subject. I was very interested. But later on, I started having a preference for scientific subjects. I was always very curious, wanting to understand how things work. So I decided to study biology. And then during my degree, I moved to the UK and I did a master's, a PhD in cell biology. And it was during my PhD that I decided to move away from the bench, which was very, very hard a decision to make. But yeah, I fell in love with science communication. And then I started my science editing business. In the meantime, I got married, I had children, and I moved to France. So, and now, as you said, I'm a science editor and I'm a science communicator and I'm CEO and co-founder of Mothers in Science. So a lot of things.
Yes, it's really, like you said, not linear, but very...
No.
There are a lot of commonalities, though, through that path. So you said you were always curious and you were supported, but in your journey from school through your studies, did you ever notice any gender stereotypes or did you feel like you didn't belong? I mean, you still forged through the path, you know, to get all your degrees in science, but was it easy or did you notice any?
I think I noticed much later on in my career. As I said, I was very lucky that during my childhood, I didn't grow up with gender roles. In my family, boys and girls were treated equally, which is something I didn't notice at the time. I only notice now when I started noticing later when I was exposed to those things. But so I never doubted that I could do anything. And I was always encouraged by my family to do whatever I wished. It was much later, PhD level, postdoc, especially after having children and becoming a mother. I think this is really where I started feeling bias that starts pulling you down and making you question yourself and losing confidence. So I was very confident as a young girl, and then with children, it was just people really make you feel inadequate, incompetent because you have children. So I think that's when it hit really hard, you know, with the maternal wall. And then it took years to rebuild myself back and to become aware. And it was by becoming aware of these barriers that I realized, you know, I'm not the problem. There's nothing wrong with me. And then I rebuild my confidence and I'm back, let's say. So, but it's a long process to unlearn all of those pressures from people that make you feel unworthy. I mean,
yeah, for sure. And did that have something to do with your transitioning away from academia to now what you're currently doing? Or were there other factors? Because now you said you're not in academia any longer, but you're doing all these other wonderful things.
No, I think probably it didn't help. But no, I really, during my PhD, I just realized I'm very passionate about science. I still am. I will always be. But the academic career really wasn't for me. Because, you know, when you love science, you just pursue your studies. I studied biology because I was passionate about it. You don't really think what you want to do with it. And our current system makes you think that an academic path is the only way to go. So I wasn't even aware that there were other career options. It was much later on, you know, I discovered science communication during my PhD. You know, I did my PhD postdoc was when I started getting involved in science outreach activity. So you feel like you don't have a choice. And then when you become a scientist, it's very nice, but you know, it's a difficult career. And I just started realizing I don't want to be a PI. I don't want to be writing grants all the time. And what I love is science. It was very difficult transition. And when I discovered science communication, that's when I realized, yeah, I'd much rather do this. I'd much rather explain science and talk about science than do science. So I think I would always move away, but certainly people making you doubt yourself isn't helpful, let's say.
With UNDP's new digital platform, STEM for All, so we have this focus on building awareness of these barriers and these stereotypes that hold women back from advancing. You've already spoken a bit, implying that you faced a lot of microaggressions and things. Do you have any examples about that? Like if you're, and we're addressing women who are currently in academia and who are listening right now.
It's just so subtle. When I was looking for postdocs after having children, you know, or when I was looking for an examiner for my thesis, my supervisor, I say, oh, I chose a very established PI who I really wanted to meet. I suggested he could be my examiner and said, oh, maybe not him, maybe this one, a PI who was less established. So these sort of things and people not really listening anymore when you're in a meeting. This happens to a lot of women. You know, I was a certain project, I was saying, no, this is not working. Project of someone else. In every lab meeting, I would say, this isn't working. I think you should do this instead. And my boss, never listen. And then a new person came into the lab, a man who said exactly the same thing I said, and suddenly it was such a great idea. I think this has happened to every woman I know. So, you know, these things make you doubt yourself when people don't listen, when they dismiss your feedback, your comments. Or when people just assume this happened as well. When I had children, people started assuming that I was no longer ambitious. At that point, I still wanted to be a PI and have my own lab. And that had never been questioned before. And now people were just assuming that I would just want to have another role. You know, this is why my boss was saying, oh, maybe you should not apply to that lab. You should apply to this lab instead. You know, it's kind of hurtful. And it makes you doubt yourself.
For sure. So were you one of few women in your lab? Were there a lot of other women that you could talk to?
No, no, this is the problem. We don't talk to each other about this. And I wasn't even aware at the time. And a lot of this is the problem. A lot of these comments are well-intentioned. There are other comments like when your boss says, oh, if you want, you can go home earlier to pick up your kids. And normally these type of comments, they are made to women and not to men. And this creates these inequalities and, you know, and it makes women feel excluded. It makes you feel like you don't belong in the lab and you should be at home and makes you feel, oh, maybe I should go home earlier to pick up my kids. So, you know, these sort of assumptions and comments that are well intended, they are not beneficial. Or sometimes there could be a social event. This happened as well to me, a social event with a collaborator, for example, like they go to the pub. And I would not be invited because it was assumed I would be at home with my children. So I wouldn't even be invited rather than I would like to be invited. And then it is my choice to go or not. So this happens a lot as well. Women, once they have children, they stop being invited to networking events because people assume they can't make it. While men with children, fathers will still be invited. So there's a lot of exclusion going on once women have children.
Yeah, and it's part of our social construct. And I see what you mean about these subtle subtle things, because often a lot of those relationships are built outside of work during these social networking, because women have very much less social capital. So it's
That's definitely a problem that we detected in our global survey. It's one of the things that came up a lot. It's mothers not being able to attend those events. And it's a problem that has to be tackled in academia, you know, just don't have those events out of office hours, period.
Exactly. So let's talk about that, about your conference. So for context, so prior to the pandemic, there was already a massive gender gap in STEM education careers worldwide. In Europe and Central Asia, the region, the women accounted for only 39% of STEM research jobs. And now, as you're pointing out, we're learning just how much the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted women's employment. And not only because they make up the majority of the hardest hit sectors, but because mothers are feeling this pressure at home due to school closures, lockdown measures. And so some of them are opting out to be at home. Yeah, tell us a bit about Mothers in Science and about your conference that you just recently held about retaining women in STEM. And then can you share with us some of the key outcomes from that conference?
Yes. So the conference was very successful. We're very, very pleased. There was a lot of interest, many participants from 54 countries. So it was truly a global event, and we were very happy with that. So our aim with the conference was really to raise awareness of these issues, start conversations, and that will lead to action. And so this is something we have achieved, to connect people. We wanted to connect organizations, connect people who may be in different parts of the world but are facing similar problems. And we did do that. We had a Slack channel. It's a very nice platform for connecting people. And it was very dynamic. There was a lot of people exchanging ideas and connecting on the Slack channel. So that was great. We really raised awareness of a lot of issues. We had feedback from attendees where, I have no idea about this. I had no idea of these microaggressions we were talking about. I thought it was me. So that was great too. And we, from this meeting, there was a meeting at the end where we gathered people who basically wanted to make change. We had a discussion, a brainstorming session. And I'm very pleased that we have a working group starting of women all around the world and organizations who are getting together to discuss these issues and to find solutions. So it's just budding now, a global movement. And we really want to use the momentum of this pandemic, because we don't want things to go back to normal, because normal wasn't normal. The pandemic was devastating for women in STEM. We discussed a lot about that during the conference as well. And this is one of the outcomes of the pandemic, is that it raised awareness of the systemic problems that were there. So we have now a group of people around the world who are getting together to work on policy, and we are going to organize ourselves and find a unified action plan to create change.
That's great. Congratulations. Can you tell us maybe what were some of the main issues that came up from the conference?
I think lack of awareness is a big problem. Because as for me, even for myself, it took years to realize all of these bias that I went through. And I consider myself lucky. I was in good labs with supportive supervisors, supportive colleagues. But still, it's really this subtle bias that people are not aware. So there was a lot of discussion around that. We did a video. You can go to our website. We made a video about the maternal wall, because from our survey, and from our community, you know, tweets and messages people send us and our survey, we realize how widespread bias and discrimination against mother is. And it is much worse than what we expected. It is appalling. The comments we had from the mothers, it's really shocking. So we made a video, a short video about that, so people really realize how bad the situation is. We discuss a lot about this. I think it was an eye-opener to realize that it's so widespread, bias and discrimination against mothers. And also a lot of discussion around what can we do. We also discuss something that is a bit sensitive, which is what is being done and what we should do, because a lot of the solutions that have been tried in terms of policy and initiatives to help mothers, and there are very few, very, very few, a lot of them are band-aid solutions. They don't really tackle the problems at the roots. And this is why things don't change, because we really need to change the system and work on policy. So this we discussed as well. And, you know, and things like I'm talking about, for example, working part-time, which is something that it's supposed to help mothers to be able to cope with work and the children. It's actually not beneficial and it creates more inequality because mothers will devote less time to their work. They will be put in secondary roles, excluded from projects. And in the long term, it will affect their career, increase the salary gap. And also there's flexibility bias. So people at work will assume a person who works part-time is less ambitious, less competent. So it's really, even though it will allow mothers to carry on working, you know, it's not a solution. And especially because men are not working part-time, it's mostly women. So this is increasing inequality. So these are hard discussions to have because obviously we want to continue to have flexibility at work. But what we need to do is encourage men to do it or, you know, and tackle flexibility bias. We need to think about these problems. So that discussion occurred as well in the conference. And that is good because there are some hard conversations, you know, parental leave as well. Mothers have much longer parental leaves than fathers, and long parental leaves are not beneficial for mothers and for the career. And it's very hard to have these discussions, but they are necessary.
Absolutely. And even for those countries that grant parental leave to fathers, fathers sometimes won't take it out of
Exactly. Social expectations.
Mm-hmm. So what are the next steps? You said you have a working group. I know you had an open letter in terms mm-hmm. of influencing policy. What are the next steps for Mothers in Science then?
So now that we have the results from our survey that we are finishing, we're finishing the analysis. We hope to publish it soon and in an academic journal as well by the end of the year. So now that we have this data set, which is very powerful because it's global and we really covered a lot in the survey and we had many responses. So now we can identify the problems and we can really start thinking about what needs to change. So now we are equipped to start having those discussions. So that now the next step is also to continue raising awareness. So now that we have the data, it will be much easier to convince our leaders in STEM that there is a problem because quite often we go to them and they're like, oh, yeah, but you're telling me mothers, oh, but where's the data? So now we have the data to prove that there is a huge problem of bias and discrimination. There are many inequalities at many levels. So we'll continue raising awareness and we are starting to work on policy in this working group, also within our organization. Even with researchers that we connected with this conference, researchers that work on policy and gender, to think about what has been done and has worked, what isn't working. And I mean, we already have a list of recommendations for the pandemic on our website and other people as well. Very good recommendations for the leaders. These are mostly for the pandemic. So now we really want to create a kit of policies that we can suggest backed by evidence, obviously, and start addressing the main actors, funding agencies, research institutions, just go one by one and push for change because we can't go back to the way things were. It's just not possible.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I had a question about the analysis. Were you surprised by any of the data points? Is there any one finding that you were just shocked by?
We address maternal well a lot, the bias and discrimination, and we had an open-ended question where people could write really what the challenges they faced. And that was very shocking. I've said it before and I say it again. It is really very shocking to read what mothers go through. So many mothers, they go on maternity leave, they come back and they lost their job. This happens a lot, or they lost their job, or they've been excluded of projects, or their colleagues published their results without their consent. Their knowledge, moms being bullied for pumping things that you think this shouldn't be happening in 2021. And things are not improving. They are not improving. So this was very shocking and surprising. And to see that also these problems are universal.
I was going to ask, is it the same globally or does it vary?
It is the same. I mean, of course, each country has their own specific problems and these we can't really address. And this is also why we're starting this global movement, because we want to start local groups. So the idea is that so groups of people in each country will address their specific problems and look at the policy there. And then we combine everything together. But yeah, of course, there are specific problems, but most of them are universal. Wherever you go, it is the same thing. So it's really a problem with the work culture, with our society that are treating mothers like rubbish, basically. We are second-class citizens. And I mean, we can't continue to accept this. On top of everything, they make us feel that it's our fault. And so, yeah, the problems are universal, even in countries they are more progressive, Scandinavian countries. Yeah. I mean, you know, the US. So yeah, problems are universal and widespread, unfortunately.
It used the word maternal wall. For our listeners just who don't necessarily know what that means, can you define that?
So yeah, so maternal wall is the bias and discrimination that mothers specifically face. You know, it's all this group of barriers that we face in the workplace. And most of them, as I said, are very subtle, many are benevolent. So we don't really see when we hit the maternal wall. And now with the pandemic that has made these problems visible, there are conversations and discussions being started that we are starting to realize that perhaps this is the major barrier that women face. You know, we know there's gender bias, gender discrimination. So, you know, it's not the glass ceiling that we need to break. It's the maternal wall, because this is where mothers start lagging behind in their careers when they have children. And men don't. Men also have children. They are fathers. So why? This is what we have to ask ourselves. Why having children doesn't affect men at all? It actually gives them a career boost. And why do women lag behind? So it's complex, but now we have the data, we know why. And it's not biology, it's not that we are biologically wired to stay home and look after the children. These are all myths. So we need to raise awareness of these issues and start tackling them.
Yeah. So as a nonprofit, I'm guessing that you have to work with other stakeholders in the ecosystem, like policymakers and such. And as on our platform, we are trying to give visibility to those stakeholders within the ecosystem that are working together to make sure that their efforts are aligned. Who do you work with? Who does Mothers in Science work with outside of the nonprofit and your membership to help advance your mission?
Actually, one of our major aims is to support other organizations into, you know, also tackling these problems and to foster collaborations. So since the beginning, we have been reaching out to several organizations, not just to ask for support, but to offer our support into how they can address these issues. So for the example, for the survey, we partner with other organizations because we wanted really, it's a global survey. So we wanted to reach every continent and as many countries as possible. So we partnered with 500 women scientists. They are based in the US, but they have branches all over the world. We also partnered with Femmes en Science, which is a nonprofit here in France. And I work, well, I'm based in France, so I also work closely with them. We partnered for the survey. They are doing their own analysis of the French data, which is very nice. We partnered with Parent in Science in Brazil. They're doing incredible work in Brazil, also to fighting for the rights of mothers in science over there. And their partners in Colombia as well. And INWES, which is a very large organization, they partnered with us as well for the survey and they support us, the open letter. And in, yeah, we work together and they have a very wide reach in Africa, Asia, Europe. I think they have members in over 60 countries. Yeah, so these are some of our partners, but we have been supported by so many other organizations. Yeah, we really try to collaborate as much as possible. And now with the global movement, again, we are trying to bridge other organizations and connect to do this global work because, you know, together we are stronger and things move much faster and change can occur much faster if we work together.
And just lastly, so what advice would you give your younger self? If you could go back in time, what would you tell yourself knowing what you know now?
I think I would tell myself to continue not listening to other people because I was like that when I was younger. I was very confident. And then, as I told you, the accumulation of bias and microaggression, it just starts pulling you down and affecting your confidence. So I think I would say, you know, keep believing in yourself and be aware of these pressures and this bias and that unfortunately our society is biased and just keep going. Don't waste time doubting yourself. Keep going.
Before we go, can you just please share how our listeners can join Mothers in Science Network?
Yes, please join us. So, you know, you can support us by joining the community and following us on Twitter or Instagram, on LinkedIn. Check our website. We have a lot of resources that are very useful on the website. And you can also share your SciMom journey. So if you are a mother in STEM, and STEM includes STEM and so medicine as well, social sciences as well, do submit your journey because it's so inspiring to other moms. It encourages other moms. Also, you can donate, support us by donating or volunteering, you know, do get in touch, join our community, get in touch. We also have the Slack group from the conference, which is very nice to connect with other moms. You can also, we're just about to start a mentoring program, which is going to launch next week, actually. So yeah, you can also be a mentor. You can apply to be a mentor if you're a sign mom in this program. So there's a lot of ways to join and support our mission.
It's amazing. Thank you so much, Isabel, for taking the time to speak with me. It's been such a pleasure learning about your journey. We've spoken several times before, but this was a really great conversation. Thank you for sharing your story and your insights with us. And we'll have all the information of Mothers in Science on our website.
Thank you so much. It was really, really nice to chat with you, Tiffany. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm Tiffany Sprague. Thank you for listening to our STEM for All podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to learn more about the key gender barriers holding girls and women back from advancing in STEM, please visit our website, STEM for All, and that's with the number 4, stemforall.eurasia.undp.org.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.